Final hour overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, Mike Johnson, Jamie Noodles McLennan. We just caught up with Kyle Dubas. And Kyle, you know, I think he didn't really commit to being the spokesman for Toronto as a hub city, but he detailed why they think Toronto makes sense. And I think obvious reasons, you know, we have the infrastructure here. We have the rinks, we've got the hotels, we've got the catering services, we've got the security. We've done it before as a city hosting major tournaments, and that's effectively what we're talking about here. So he said that. Nick Robertson, you know, he didn't even go right to the games. He basically said, we'll see what happens at camp, because that's what we're dealing with here.
Right.
Like a training camp where if Nick Robertson shows up and is flying in camp, that might affect what Sheldon Keefe decides to do once they actually play games.
Well,
somehow, if I had to bet, Jamie, I bet it'd be more likely that Nick Robertson is ready to go flying early than Kyle Clifford. Not to say anything about Kyle Clifford, but like a veteran who's been around might take a little while to kind of get their motor up to game speed, where I bet a kid who sees an opportunity who's just, he's just younger and he's fresher and he's just more invigorated about the prospects, I could see him looking very good early. So we'll see how that shakes out. But I like his chances of showing well anyways to begin with.
I agree. And the other thing that we always have, and if we're going to be treating this like a traditional training camp, you always see a guy make the team out of training camp. Like, you know, is it going to be, remember it was Callie Rosen and it was, you know, it was guys like that. Now that was on the back end, it's farther down, but that's, you know, with the Leafs top six, you know, somewhat cemented, then you're, you know, you can plug and play. And to your point, Johnny, if Kyle Clifford is taking a little longer or somebody like that, Mikheyev doesn't look up to speed, and you got a speedster or somebody who's got energy and they're like, let's try this guy out in game one, see what he looks like. If he's overwhelmed, you can plug and play. Like, you know, to me, I think there is going to be a surprise. Not only Toronto's roster, other teams are going to have one or two surprise players. Like, we need to put this guy in because he's been unreal in training camp.
Well, exactly. And you mentioned the defense. Like, where's Rasmus Sandin going to be in another 2 months? Like, maybe if he's been in Sweden and skating and he's working out and he shows up and has a really quality 2 or 3 week camp, it's not like you got six Hall of Famers you're trying to knock out. He may be a guy who they think could help them in a 7-game series or a 5-game series.
Well, it's a 5-game series, and it's basically all or go home. So you got to go, like,
you got to play who you think is ready to play.
Exactly. Whoever's ready to play.
It's not who you like the most necessarily. It's who do you think is ready to play? And I think up the left side with Robertson, again, there's a lot of hype around this kid because he's their top prospect. He lit up the O this year. Again, on Instagram and Twitter, he posts these videos of him working out, and he sounds very committed, and I don't dispute that. I don't think it's disingenuous. I think he really wants to play and wants to be a pro. Good for him. And the fact that he's getting the nod to even be a part of the Hub City stuff is a testament to his work ethic and how the organization feels about him. But up the left side of the ice, like, Janssen's not coming back. Kyle just confirmed that. So he's out. You know Hyman's playing, and you know Clifford is playing.
Right.
Like, Clifford's playing on the fourth line. They're not going to disrespect him and not play him. I think he's playing. But then once you get beyond that, you're talking Pierre Engvall, Ilya Mikheyev, Nick Robertson. You're talking rookies that aren't owed anything. Yep. Anything. So
you're right. Like,
there's no reason why if Robertson may show up and put on a show in camp and they say, it might be like, let's put him with Tavares. Like, let's put him on, forget the fourth line energy. Let's move him up the lineup. And I know it's going to sound a little bit crazy, but who else are you talking about as an option there? Pierre Engvall, what's his resume to suggest he's ready to go?
If you want Kapanen on his off wing, then you're right. I mean, that's just it.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's an opportunity, especially given his position. Like, if it was center ice, it's different. If it, you know, like, to me, that the fact that he can play left wing, like, that is on paper probably more of the weaker side.
The least impactful, but also the least impactful, Jamie. Like, you can screw up as a left winger, and you're not costing goals. You're not going to blow a game very often. Listen, trust me, I played wing. I know. Like, you can get through a whole game, not play very well at all, but really not cost your team very much. You might not help them, but you won't really hurt them. And I think that also contributes to his opportunity. I mean, there will be a, you know, there might be some actual competition in this, you know, makeshift camp they're going to have in July.
Right. I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
I would expect there should be. And like Kyle said, he said, you know, obviously they would prefer 16 teams. It just it gives you better odds. You know,
right.
there's going to be a lot. The teams that felt like they were 100% in, that's why we got a couple of no votes from Tampa, from Carolina. They're like, we thought we were in. Why are we doing this, you know, round-robin thing or play-in thing? Or why are we adding teams that could get on a heater and knock us out or knock someone else out? And the Leafs were not as comfortably into the playoffs, clearly, but the numbers, the probability would suggest they were probably going to get there. But I think that's a very appropriate mentality. You know, this is the reality now. This is it. You can sulk about it or try to turn it into a positive. And Kyle said, we're an organization that they haven't won anything in 15 years. They have not won a playoff round in 15 years. So even just winning a play-in round, regardless of what it actually is defined as historically, it will mean something. It will be an accomplishment.
The players will look at it like the playoff round. You can call it a play-in. You can call it a tweener. Who cares what the stats go? The players who are desperate to feel a playoff win after a few years of some really tough losses in the first round will treat that 3-5 if they get through Columbus as if they just won a playoff round. And I wonder on some way, like I understand it's harder, it's longer, it's 19 games, but if it helps them big picture to maybe get one under their belt before they have to play Tampa or Boston, which they would have started with in the East.
Well, and guess who else is going to respond as if it's a playoff win? The fans,
the fan base,
the media. Yeah, the whole city is going to, like, you know, if you're allowed to parade in the streets, people will be going up and down Yonge Street if they beat Columbus in a best of five play-in
to get to the playoffs.
Yeah, just to get in. It'll be a celebration in Toronto. But anyway, we know what the playoff format is going to be. We still don't know when it's going to happen, where it's going to happen, what the testing protocols are going to look like. And to try to get some of those answers, we're joined now by former Leaf himself, longtime NHLer, and currently the executive assistant to Donald Fehr with the NHLPA. Back on Overdrive, here's Matthew Schneider. How you doing, Matthew?
Not too bad. And you forgot former teammate of your two hosts there as well.
Oh, yeah, both of you guys. That's a rarity. There you go. Okay.
Schneider's held my hand. We sat beside each other at the Gardens in the dressing room, and he was the wily vet, and I was the kid, and I was just like, just try to get open. He'll get you the puck.
There you go.
And unfortunately, I think I handed Matthew several minuses when I was in net for the Islanders. I especially remember a real rough night in L.A. where Gretzky put a clinic on, and I lasted all of three goals on eight shots, unfortunately.
I think I got benched. I think Milbury benched me that game. I remember that night.
Oh, it was rough. Rough night.
Those are the ones you guys always remember. It's like the bad beats in poker. You guys had to have some good times, Noodles. You must have stood on your head a few times, and Schneider put up 4 or 5 points. I'm sure that happened at some point.
I'm sure.
We got a lot of stories about that year, I'll tell you that right now. Actually, with the Leafs, too, MJ, right? With the Leafs, we had some good ones there, too. There were two not-so-great years, I got to tell you. Not-so-great years, but my friendships with these guys, you know, that makes up for it all.
There you go. Well, I mean, speaking of, you know, friendships and camaraderie, if and when we get to these hub cities and this playoff format, like that's going to be a big part of it. We've discussed a lot about that and how comfortable the guys are going to be around each other, the freedom that might be either limited or potentially accessible. But how big of a pillar of the conversations revolve around, you know, just freedom and camaraderie and being teammates and having fun, even though you're going to be in a very unique situation in one of these hub cities?
Yeah, you know, that's something obviously a lot of guys are discussing. You know, listen, we wouldn't be having any of these conversations if, you know, our experts, the doctors, infectious disease specialists, you know, haven't told us that, you know, these scenarios are possible. You know, we can create very safe environments, you know, and how locked down you are depends on what your risk tolerance is. You know, I guess I would just say, you know, if you're you're with your family in your house and nobody's allowed to go come in or out, you're pretty confident that that you're safe in there, knowing that, you know, no one has the virus. You know, you can create that on a much bigger scale and put everybody within a bubble, so to speak, not have people come in and out, you know, all the hygiene protocols put into place, things of that nature. Regular testing is a big part of it, as I'm sure you guys have heard over and over again. But those are all keys to success. And, you know, we still understand that there we might go through this whole process. The beginning of phase two is simply, you know, buildings opening up. And, you know, I think as one of our doctors put it, it's really just, you know, guys remembering how to get to the rink and figure out where their stalls are and how to, you know, what to do with their laundry again, because guys have been off. There's a lot of new protocols and hygiene membership rules that are going to have to be put in place. New hires for clubs, their own infectious disease specialists, things of that nature. So this is just step one in the process, really, and we know there are a lot of hurdles to overcome in the future.
Schneiz, when you talk to the guys, like, what has been their greatest question or concern about, you know, trying to get back to the rink, get back playing, and eventually get to playoff games?
You know, I think the biggest issue has been access to ice, you know, you know, depending on guys, we have guys that have full gyms in their garage or their basement. We have guys that have been, you know, in their apartments for, you know, weeks on end without access to any equipment doing body weight exercises. But, you know, the common issue early on, and as jurisdictions start to open up, guys are getting more and more access to facilities and ice, although they haven't been necessarily NHL facilities. It's that. And, you know, the closest thing we have to really compare it to would be, you know, a lockout scenario. But even in that scenario, guys are on the ice, they're skating and they're training, even though it was uncertain, you know, when we're coming back, if we're coming back in different years. So that's, I think, been the single toughest thing, is that guys have not been able to get on the ice on a regular basis.
With Matthew Schneider from the NHLPA. So yesterday, you know, it became official. Obviously, the Players Association, you guys voted on the 24-team format, gave the go-ahead. Gary Bettman and company came out and said, this is what's going on. This is what's going to happen with the draft lottery. This is what's going to happen with the draft, which will happen after the season comes to a conclusion. So what's next here in the pecking order? What else has to be determined and agreed upon? Where do we go from here after we've completed this most recent step?
Well, so, you know, I think looking back, I wish we had phase one, phase 2A, and phase 2B, but we didn't. and really, you know, it's kind of what I talked about a little bit here. It's just, you know, it's a, you know, if you got your car sitting in the driveway for 3 months, although the new cars, it really doesn't matter. But back, I'm aging myself now. My old Oldsmobile 78 Regency, if it was sitting in the driveway for 4 months in Cornwall, where I played junior, you gotta turn it on and let it run a little while, and you know, just to let the thing warm up. You know, we're just walking here, hoping that we get the facilities open, guys come back, they start to feel comfortable in the smaller groups. You know, even just something like as simple as, you know, wiping down the weights after guys come through. And you know, you're squatting, then you go over to, a bench, and you're on there. You know, do we have to wipe it down every time? You're really getting used to all these new protocols and things. This is going to take a few weeks, no question about it. You know, we want to eventually be able to introduce more, you know, coaches, more, you know, bigger workouts. Right now, we're limiting it to six guys at a time in the facility. This phase two is going to change over time to give us the confidence to move to phase three, which would be a full training camp, essentially. So we want to have the ability to have guys in their own facilities, training camps, like we normally would, working out together, practicing, all those things. And then that would lead to the creation of the bubble city, so to speak, and eventually playing games. So, you know, I mean, the things that we're going to have to negotiate and discuss over the next month, 2 months, however long it takes. I mean, it's a large list. There's no question about it. And we haven't even gotten to the draft and free agency and salary arbitration. I mean, those things are all thrown into the mix. And, you know, we all know well from all of our collective bargaining history, nothing's agreed to till everything's agreed to.
Schneid's, you mentioned the lockouts and that type of scenario, using that as maybe a small reference, even though this is uncharted territory. You know, the information process is a lot different than when we were going through lockouts, and even in the 90s, the other lockout was almost faxes you were getting from other guys. Is everyone want to be on top of this? Every player, and what I mean, let's just give a number, 750 players. Is everyone in the know, or are there players that we've all played with that are like, you know what, just let me know when and where I got to be, and I'll be there type of scenario? Or is everyone on top of this daily as far as informational access?
Yeah, you know, like, what's the old saying? The more things change, the more they stay the same. You know, every team has their guys, their player reps, and, you know, three or four guys that are constantly, they want to be involved, want to be in the know. You got a group of guys in the middle that, you know, they'll hop on some calls and you know, just kind of stay updated, things of that nature. You know, we have the divisional player reps now. There's five of us former players on staff, but three of them have 10 teams. Actually, one has 11. Joe Ricci, Steve Webb, and Rob Zaminer, they work with their group of teams, and they're on the phone continuously with the guys on their teams. We have regular board calls throughout this process. And so, you know, the communication is challenging, but you know, the one thing Don Fear brought over from baseball, which has been great for us, you know, every guy is welcome and invited to every single meeting we have internally or with the league. And, you know, it requires a lot more work. There's no question about it, because we have so many different opinions. It'd be nice if, you know, the league deals with 31 owners and, you know, and we have 700 guys plus, as you pointed out. So it is challenging, but in the end, you know, everybody has a voice. Everybody has a say. How much of a say is up to the individuals.
With Matthew Schneider, we'll get you out of here on this kind of a leapfrog off of what you were just talking about. We referenced what Devin Dubnyk had to say to The Athletic earlier this week, where he indicated, you know, you guys, the Players Association, they haven't heard all the details. They haven't discussed all the details. And it got us to thinking and us talking about why that wouldn't be the case. You know, why wouldn't you be voting on all the possible proposals, the two-hub city, the potential testing protocol? Because you have to have an idea of where this is going. You know, maybe not a formal vote, but why not talk to all the players? You guys have nothing but time right now, and get a read on how they would feel about maybe no family allowed, you know, in the hub cities, or limited amounts of family. You get what I'm saying, Matthew? Like, throw a bunch of things at the wall and get a read on how the guys feel about it now, as opposed to, you know, a month from now, if there's somewhat of a deadline at that point.
Well, you know, when we have our board calls, when I say our board call, that's that insinuates there's 31 guys on the call from every team. Our last board call, I think we had over 130 guys on it. And like I said, everybody is invited on all of our calls. When we have a vote now, we don't have a vote on a call on yay or nay. Our votes are open for 24, 48, sometimes 72 hours, so that the player reps go back and they gauge their team and they have the conversations with the team. And in some cases, if the player rep doesn't feel comfortable explaining the different issues to guys, then myself or Don or our general counsel, Don Javalo, one of our lawyers and the DPRs, we hop on call and we'll go through it with their entire team or a group of guys in their team. So, you know, that's our process. Our board is is who makes the decisions. 31 players, 31 reps. Each team has a vote. And, you know, that process has served us well for the last 8 or 9 years. I don't anticipate that changing. When we have decisions like a CBA extension, which is what we're talking about now, things like that become a membership-wide vote. Then it's just every player has one vote, 720 guys, whatever the number is that we are, that we're currently sitting at right now, every player will have a vote. So, you know, I think, you know, are there areas being missed? Maybe, possibly. But I think, you know, you have to have a pretty concerted effort to bury your head in the sand and not make an effort to know what's going on to be a player in our association today. And, you know, I think that's, you know, that's how it's operated. That's what happened with the vote over the format. And I don't see that changing anytime in the near future. It's served us well.
Always great catching up with you, and we always appreciate you finding time for us. We'll do this again down the road, and we look forward to seeing everyone back on the ice, hopefully sooner rather than later. Thank you, Matthew.
My pleasure. Anytime, guys.
There he is, Matthew Schneider, former teammate of both of you guys. I was not aware of that.
He was more than just a teammate to me because our tickets, as you guys know, the home team, you get two tickets to your home games. And so my rookie year, my two tickets beside Matthew's two tickets. So whoever Matthew had at the game would sit right beside my parents or my buddies, whoever I had at the game. So when he sent his buddies, my buddies would get friends with his buddies. And I don't know how many times Matthew and I would go out after a game on a Saturday night because our friends had linked up in the stands at the Gardens. So yeah, Matt and I, yeah, we spent lots of time together.
There you go. Yeah, you forget about that connection. The buddies start rolling into town or whatever. I guess you're from here, so they're from here anyway. But all of a sudden they connect, and it's like, all right, I guess we're going out. And this is the two-pack tonight. This is what we're doing.
I think I brought up a bad memory for him getting benched in L.A. that night by Milbury. I've told you that story where Milbury came in before the game. He's like, the minute Gretzky gets a puck, just go to him. So you got four guys chasing Gretzky around. He's the greatest passer in the game. He's backhand saucering it, send guys in on breakaways. It was such an embarrassing game.
Why don't you get on Twitter and send him that note and see what he has to say for himself?
I don't know. You get blocked.
I wonder if any coach has ever blocked a former player in the history of Twitter.
I don't know. It was a gong show that night. But the funny thing about it, I got yanked. And Schneid's got benched, and he was sitting beside me, and we just kind of sat there the whole night talking. So random.
But in L.A., wondering where you're going out after the game.
Yeah, I wonder what that conversation entailed.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, when you get pulled and you've had a rough night, you're not going out. You feel bad. You go right back to the room. You know,
or
I did anyways.
You go out so hard you forget all about the night.
Yeah, I should have done that way, but I didn't. I was a nerd back then.
Yeah, that's amateur hour. You should have floored it just to make sure you never remember that detail again.
Never blame it on
Milbury. It's not your fault. What a brutal game plan. As if no one's ever thought of that. Hey, why don't we just go check 99? Let's see if that could happen. Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Just chase him around the net. I love that. He's behind the net.
Don't let him stop in behind.
Behind the net. Go see what happens. Yeah.
Two guys, both the same way. Just go chase him and see what happens. All right, so thanks again to Matthew Schneider. Lots to recap here. There's some NBA news out there as well, courtesy of the usual suspects, Shams and Woj, and what the NBA might be looking at as they gear up to play. Potentially on the same timeline as the NHL, more than likely it will be. You know, and I think they're all kind of connected, right? They've all been talking with government officials, health officials down in the States primarily.
Each other.
For sure. Yeah. Okay, you're going here, we're going here, we're going to start. If we're jockeying for TV and all that kind of stuff, I think they're probably all in this together. So we'll get you details on that as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, thanks again to Matthew Schneider from the PA. And thank you to Aria on Twitter, who is the latest, who sent us a picture of a toilet sitting at the edge of someone's driveway, because now we have basically been established as the show that's seeking that kind of content out ever since Noodles admitted that his ended up at the end of his driveway about a week and a half ago.
Yeah, it was an MJ, you weren't on the show, but
no.
I
know.
We got the pool going and everything, and the cabana has a toilet, and we needed to swap it out. There was a crack in it. So I had, you know, Nick, my plumber, show up, and I wasn't paying attention. We're social distancing, so I'm in the house. I just talked to him through the screen. Mm-hmm. And I'm dealing with the kids, shower, you know, get the kids all showered up. Nick texts me. He's like, all good. I'm just headed out and left. He left, and he left the old toilet at the edge of the driveway. I was like I don't know what's going on. I'm like usually I don't know why. I think you just swap them out. I don't know. But he just left it there. So, like, I was so embarrassed. I didn't know what to do. Like, luckily.
You got to call service to have someone come pick that up? Like, that's not regular garbage pickup?
I guess not, man, because I'm telling you, there's a lot of it happening around Toronto, because we're getting almost daily. We get some guy rolling past the house. He's like, well, there's another one. We'll snap that pick and send it into the old Overdrive account. Yeah, let the boys know what's up. It's almost hourly we're getting it.
Cause it was really awkward, yeah.
It is awkward, but you know what's happening is, like, I don't know who's making money in this world. I don't know how much money is circulating, but I am pretty certain that anything like decor – within the house, people are upgrading. I know from my
DIY own projects.
Absolutely.
All day long.
I know from my own experience. We're doing so much stuff around our own house, and we just ordered a whole new patio set and everything because we're just in the house. So, like, now, like any other, if it was normal times, I wouldn't pay attention to stuff, right? Like, I'm not at the house that much. I'm going to work, I'm going to games, I'm interacting with people, I'm going to bars, restaurants, dinners, all that kind of stuff. Now, for 2.5 months, I've been staring at stuff, and my wife, everyone's doing the same thing. So everyone's like, okay, I got to get something for this wall because I hate the fact that there's nothing there. I hate this toilet, so it's gone. It's got to go. I need to paint this. I need to upgrade that. Everyone's doing it. It seems that way anyway.
You know what I did is, you know, the kids are always like in the office, like, you know, walking in and in and out. So I put a lock on my office and I ordered it. I went, you know, and I had it delivered. I had to cut the hole. I had to do everything. I bought these tools through Amazon. They were delivered. And then I watched a YouTube clip on how to carve things out and do it the proper way. I was actually quite proud of myself. I was working a lather up. I was sweating, but I've got these tools. They're actually, I'll bring them on. They're sitting on my dresser over there where it's a door jam, and then it's a Ryobi, like you carve it out. Like it's its own little chisel. It's impressive. Like
beautiful.
I don't have the skills to be woodworking, but I watched like an 8-minute tutorial on YouTube to figure out how to put this thing in. And I was able
Except
to
you
be
just
successful.
Spent $500 on tools and spent 4 hours of your life cursing and sweating for a job that you could have got some sort of handyman for about $100 off your Jiffy app to come easily. Do it no problem if you're allowed to.
Yeah. Not even, you're right. He would have been in here in 10 minutes and he probably would have had the proper tools and gone, you know, drilled it, popped it in and said, I'll see you later. But I did it myself.
Do it yourself, man,
impressive.
If you can.
Impressive.
Like we try this. I mentioned this like a month ago or whatever. We had a couple of appliances that blew out because there was a big power outage out here. And our oven went on the fritz and our dishwasher went down. Ooh. And we did the same thing. We thought, okay, maybe we can take the dishwasher apart and following YouTube. Yeah, all of a sudden I'm Al Borland over here.
Yeah, oh, you lost me at take it apart.
Oh yeah,
no chance. That's
probably not in the rule book, right? Like, don't ever
like void your warranty.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I would assume it probably did. But we were following a YouTube video and we're like, we got it, figured it out, cleaned it out. Still didn't work. So I had to get on the Jiffy app and I had my guy Vlad come over. And he knocked out both of them. Like, he's like, I'll get this figured out. Just give me a day. I got to order a couple of parts. And so shout out to Vlad and the Jiffy app, because we were back on the map pretty quickly considering the circumstances.
Yeah.
But I also got to feel like I accomplished something because I, like, cleared out the basically the sewage that had been building up in the dishwasher, even though I didn't get it to work. It was like a fuse issue. But wow. Best of both worlds, Jiffy app pros, and, you know, as a do-it-yourselfer, I felt like I got a notch on my belt.
Do you have a belt? Do you have an actual tool belt, Noodles? Do you?
No, I don't.
No, No, my son has a Bob the Builder one, so I don't think
that
counts.
Count.
I'm not sure if that qualifies.
Does not count.
I don't have a tool belt, and nor should I.
Nor like should anyone that isn't a certified,
licensed worker.
Exactly.
Yeah, but you know what it is?
I have one.
It's golf club guy. It's golf glove guy on the course. You know, when you're watching it. That's what it is. I think I'm a woodmaker. What is it? A woodsman, tradesman.
Yeah, you're a tradesman. You're a carpenter.
No, I'm not. Yes. But
you're a carpenter over there.
I have all the tools. When my dad passed, he had a ridiculous set of tools because he was very skilled with his hands. He could build anything. So he passed some of the tools on to his sons, and I got some of them. They're in the garage. I use them once in a while. But I'm
attaboy.
I think I'm about a 2 out of 10 in sorting things out.
When it comes to handiwork and stuff like that, I'm with you. Yeah, Megan tweeting in saying there shouldn't be sewage in your dishwasher. That's not the appropriate terminology. It wasn't sewage. Yeah. It was,
you might want to rinse those plates off there.
Exactly. The
give it a quick scrape.
A little bit off here. But I don't know. Whatever it was, it was a buildup. Like, I thought there was something was going on. There was blocked, right? I thought there was some blockage. And I got in there, and I got my hands dirty. Did you just say you have a tool belt, Johnny? I can't picture you rocking a tool belt.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. You guys know me well enough to know that how out of character that would be for me. But yeah, I think when I first left college, turned pro, my parents, still parenting me when I'm 23 in the NHL, they bought me like a toolbox that had, you know, a couple screwdrivers, I suppose, in it and a hammer. And a tool belt came with it.
Wow.
And so I've had that tool belt in the bottom. I still have the toolbox. The belt has never been worn. Not once has it ever been, like, the loop put inside the buckle. But I have a leather-bound, professional-grade tool belt that is pristine right now. It is so clean, 25 years in isolation. But, yeah, so I have one, I guess, but I've never actually put it on.
You would feel great wearing it. I would say that.
I probably feel empowered. Get the hammer in the loop and your little screwdrivers in the holsters.
Totally.
You're like, I got a tape measure all back here. Oh, yeah, I can see that.
Totally. Like, you'd be like, all right, I actually got it going on here. Like, I know what's up. I got my tools in the proper position. I'm locked and loaded.
And then I wouldn't have to do with any of them, though. I'd be like,
no
okay.
No idea what I'm doing, but I looked the part.
Do I have a cell phone to call a professional? Or Noodles in that case.
Or Noodles.
Or Vlad.
I was exactly the Jiffy app.
I was just reminded by a friend that said, didn't you apprentice as a plumber once? So I should have a tool belt. Yes, I was a plumber's apprentice. I did not have my own tool belt. And I was a terrible apprentice. So, you know.
Yeah. Being an apprentice is like, what's the difference between an apprentice and an intern? Like, I guess you're getting your
getting
hands
paid?
A little bit dirtier. Like, you're making money. Yeah, I guess you would be making money, right? Like,
if you get paid as an apprentice?
Yeah, I would assume. I've never been one. Been an intern.
I was a plumber's apprentice, and so I was on a first year, like, there's levels, first year ticket, I guess. So I was, like, learning from a full-time plumber, the guy who, you know, yelled at me all the time and you know, had a few vodkas at lunch, that type of situation.
Right. And you got to hit like 10,000 hours to be certified, right?
Yeah, I don't know. He was great.
Did you wear your pants low, Jamie, every time you bent over?
I did.
In typical plumber fashion.
Ah, for sure. I put a lot of pride into it. I tried. I only worked a couple weeks every summer. And this was when I was like 17, 18 years old. I just need a little summer money.
Oh, exactly.
So I worked the craziest jobs, but I always worked. That's the one thing. Since I was 12, I always had some form of a job. They may not have been the sexiest of jobs, but I always felt like I needed
plumber apprentice. Pretty darn sexy. I'm not gonna lie to you.
Like, yeah, an apprentice.
I mean, that plays well.
That means you got a plan, right? You're going somewhere. You're putting in hours, man. If you're if you're an apprentice, that means you're committed to something. It's going to take you a while to get there. And in your case, you never got there.
Committed just for 2 weeks at a time, though.
Yeah, it just never happened.
The other hardest part was, and I know we got to get moving on, was soldering. Like, can you imagine me with a soldering gun?
dangerous.
But that was tough.
Melt your fingers off.
Exactly. Like you're working with, you know, a hot gun and you're not very schooled on it. And it's like 8:30 in the morning and the guy you're working with is hungover and he's screaming at you, let's go. And I'm like, I've got a soldering gun in my hand and some wire that I'm trying to melt into a pipe. It was ridiculous.
Well, that's the thing. Like you see some places in this country too. It's not like we're immune to it. But around the world where regulations are a little bit relaxed,
yes.
And it's like, okay, who is this guy?
That what? Can't be safe.
There's no way he's doing that properly.
No, he's got a blowtorch and he's lighting his cigarette and like doing something else. You know?
Right.
Smoking while doing it.
Yeah, exactly. He works at a gas firm or something. He's got a blowtorch. Like, it's just not
he's
good.
He's in an Adidas jumpsuit. And you're like, what? This doesn't make any sense, dude.
No,
what are you doing, and how did you show up at my front door?
Yeah, exactly.
But, anyway, moving on. We will come back and recap a busy afternoon and start teeing up tomorrow's show as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
Welcome to Jerry's After Dark, where all of your wildest hot takes come to life. Because Jerry's always in the mood for one more, and you know exactly what I'm talking about.
This is so ridiculous. Jerry's After Dark.
I love the George Michael play-in. That is fantastic. Yeah. Just set the mood.
Gotta set the mood, Johnny. One more horny hot take from Jerry. In fact, he's got two more horny hot takes. Yeah, to wrap up the afternoon.
Night.
I forgot about this. I forgot to even plug it. I almost completely forgot about Jerry's After Dark, but we had him on around 4:40 today. Maybe that's why I forgot, because we bumped Jerry and everything has kind of been off track as a result. But he was doing rapid fire Jerry's, looking ahead to the 24-team playoff format that we know is going to happen. We just don't know when and where. But with that in mind, I think we have two more hot takes left to place a percentage on. You guys ready for this?
Ready to rock.
Let's do it.
The Conn Smythe will be won by a goalie. Noodles will be so fired up, he'll present the trophy in his underpants.
Never know.
Well, why would you be in your underpants? And why would you be the one out there with the Conn Smythe?
Exactly.
Anyway, that's an interesting one, because when was the last time a goalie won the Conn Smythe?
Quick.
Would it be? Yeah, probably, right?
Johnny Quick in 2012, 11?
Yeah, it doesn't happen much. Like, last year was O'Reilly. The year before was Ovi.
Yeah.
And then Sid won back-to-back, I think, didn't he?
There was when Sid won, there was an argument, not an argument, a debate that Matt Murray may have or could have been up for it, but he didn't.
I would have gone Binnington last year. Binnington was my guy. I always lean goalies, but it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But I'm high on this year because I think of the nature of the event and the fact that, you know, it's going to come and go so quickly, and I'm not sure the players are going to be up to speed, maybe a little bit rusty. I don't know if the superstars are going to be the superstars we expect.
And Brian, if it's not one of the teams we expect.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? If it's Florida and Bobrovsky, you know, if it's...
There's your guy. Arizona, it's Kemper, you know.
Right. If, you know, it's Minnesota. Who knows? Like, if it's a team that has gone on this incredible run and the goaltender's gotten them there, well, then, you know, that's...
And I think that's going to happen. I really think that's very likely. I think a goalie's going to get really hot and drag a team somewhere. I'm going to say 51%, just into the majority.
Okay.
I'll go a goalie wins the Conn Smythe.
I'm going lower because just on the percentages, I'm playing the field. Like, you know, goaltenders, you need goaltending, and especially in this scenario. But even something that stood out for me, what Kyle said, like a team has to win 19 games to win the cup this year, not 16, 19, you know, like that play-in, like, or I guess.
If it's one of those bottom eight teams.
The bottom eight. If it's a top four, what are they winning? They've got to win
16.
It doesn't
matter.
Or maybe
12.
Matter.
They still got to play their play-in games, though. They're round robin or whatever, so they're still playing
three more games. But it doesn't matter where they're seated, I guess.
Right.
Technically, that's what I'm saying. So,
if St. Louis wins, they'll have to play maybe 3-3, 4-4. So it might just be 14 for them. Yeah. We don't know what the first two rounds will be. So
true. I hope they're best of seven, too. Like, why would you play best of five
I don't
for
get
the first
it.
Two rounds?
For sure. Like, once you're in there, might as well go best of seven. You can do them faster than a regular series. There's no travel anyways. But I go the other way. I think of this as from a forward's perspective. So everything's disjointed, preparation, cohesiveness, all those things. And when that happens, more chances, sloppy hockey, more penalties, more offense. I think 20% only. I don't think the goaltenders will be in a position to be as great because system play and that kind of tight defense takes longer than maybe offensive games to come back. So I'm saying less chance. I think we'll be seeing more goals and less standout performances in the playoffs by the goalies.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm 30%. I didn't give up a percentage.
So. All right, let's get to the final Jerry's After Dark.
A Canadian team wins the Stanley Cup, and Jerry gets to say, come and get the Stanley Cup.
I hope it happens, folks. See you on the other side. Jerry's out.
There goes Jerry. I find that hard to believe that he hopes a Canadian team wins the Stanley Cup, but you never know. And there will be six teams in the tournament, right? Only Ottawa will not be included. That's big, man. Six Canadian teams will have a run at it. So basically 25% of the teams that are up for grabs are going to be representing Canada.
I'm going 28%, just above that 25% threshold, just slightly above.
Okay.
It'd be a great story, but the field is much larger, and a lot of those, there's not
and none
many.
Of them are in the top eight, like the top four for the East or the West.
That's what I was just saying, that like none of them are in that top tier of teams technically right now.
Although there is a guarantee, right? Because isn't Calgary playing Winnipeg? So one Canadian team for sure will be in the actual playoffs.
Correct.
I'm going to say higher because, listen, 2020 has been crazy. Nothing has gone according to plan. It's been what, since 1993? Since a Canadian team has won the Stanley Cup, is that correct? 27
Habs,
years?
93, yep.
Why not? Nothing makes sense. So I'm going to say there's a 45% chance. We got a Canadian team. We got six entrants. Someone's going to go on a run. Why not in this crazy year have a Canadian team win in a year where they can't have a parade?
I know. That's
makes sense.
That's exactly what will happen. The Leafs are going to win the Cup. Everyone knows it. There'll be no parade. There'll be an asterisk beside it. It won't count. You know,
no one could say they were there on
exactly.
the cup-clinching night.
Exactly. Some guys had season tickets for 85 years, and they're finally going to win, and he can't go to the games. But I think I'll go with the odds. I think I'll sit at 25%, just below you, Noodles. The fact that none of them are in the top four of either conference is a little bit difficult to believe. I mean, it's going to make the round-robin stuff or the play-in stuff incredible theater. Like, you're going to have likely every night or every day three Canadian teams playing. So that's going to be a lot of fun, just back-to-back-to-back. But I can't say I love any of the six teams. Like, I like the Leafs. I like their talent. I like Winnipeg. I don't love any of the teams out west. But, yeah, I'll go 25%. 25%, just based on the sheer unpredictability of the whole thing, where it really truly could be a crapshoot. Like, the seeding may actually turn out to be a completely moot point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without travel,
without
fans.
Maybe the play-in round's an advantage because you're kind of more playoff-ready as opposed to the round-robin top-four seeds. Who knows?
I think it could be. I think it could be. You know, I think that makes sense. Intensity gets ramped up. You get a couple of exhibition games in. Obviously, goaltending is going to matter. Health is going to matter. Luck is going to factor in like it always does. But I don't think there's much difference between the first-place team and the 24th-place team anyway. Like, the Bruins are clearly better than Chicago. Like, clearly better. But night and day better? Like, it's not like Boston's playing Detroit where you're like, this is a joke.
Right.
Like, Chicago's a good team. Montreal, they're good. Like, they're not great, but they're a good team. They're a decent team.
Right.
So everyone that's there, once you get through, I think you're going to feel very good about your opportunities and your chances. And, again, let's hope it happens sooner rather than later. More than likely late July, early August. Same thing with the NBA. But that's going to be a fun ride, man. come September, if the NFL's going, baseball's going, hockey's going, basketball's going, man, you got
the Masters, golf, U.S. Open, tennis, like
unreal. It's going to be awesome. Agreed. All right, Johnny, thanks for doing this, buddy. It's been a blast, man. We'll have to get you back in here at some point, hopefully in the next month or two or whatever. I mean, if you're around, we're around. So
next week, I'm
here on.
It?
I think I'm here on Monday, but you might not be because
next
it might
players
be
players only.
Players only, baby.
Oh, I like it. All right, man. Enjoy that. We'll catch you Monday. Right. Dave Poulin in here for the next couple of days. Noodles, have a great night. We're back tomorrow at
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.